Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 29th of July, 2013. The podcast that spies on your public life. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me again this week is Lord T. Hawkeye himself, Tim Dyson. Tim, welcome back to the show.
Hey, boys and girls, and good to be back again.
Let's give an atomic wedgie to the news of the bogus. You know, a couple of times on this podcast, we've mentioned the Republic of Estonia.
Yes, what was the last one about, I believe?
Well, we've been talking about how well they've done economically, and they have a higher ranking on the Index of Economic Freedom than any other former Soviet state. They're at number 13, just one place above the United Kingdom. They recovered nicely after the recent financial crisis, because they had a very responsible fiscal policy, and Paul Krugman's been trying to do his best to explain his way around that one. And some economists are actually predicting that very soon that country will be one of the most productive nations in the world.
Amazing.
Well, now they're setting an example for the rest of the world in another area, electronic voting. So we all know about the problems America has had with e-voting, especially those Diebold machines. Hawk, what's going on in Canada with electronic voting?
I think we still do it by hand, actually. And the funny thing is, they tend to get it all counted quicker than the U.S. does, even if you account for population.
Yeah. That seems to be the way it goes, but Estonia has created the first nationwide internet-based voting system, and they did exactly what pretty much every security professional says should be done with any e-voting system. They released the source code to the public.
So everyone can check and make sure there's no shenanigans going on.
Right, it's just up there on GitHub. So security professionals all over the world will be checking it basically for free. I mean, they just look at it, and if they see a problem, they let them know.
Yeah, because if anything, voting needs to be open. No one wants to suspect that their vote isn't being counted or being counted for less than someone else, or even that someone's losing votes because of incompetence or whatever.
Well, here's what Tarvi Martens, chairman of Estonia's Electronic Voting Committee, had to say. Quote, "This is the next step toward a transparent system. The idea, which was the result of joint discussion between numerous Estonian IT experts and the Electronic Voting Committee, was implemented today. We welcome the fact that experts representing civil society want to contribute to the development and security of the e-elections." Now, this was prompted by complaints from their 2011 elections. Apparently, the electronic totals didn't match the paper totals. And of course, that meant the losing party was crying voter fraud. There's no evidence of any voter fraud, but it does stress the need for openness and transparency whenever any form of electronic voting is used, and opening the source code is a big step toward that.
Oh yeah, I mean, if you're going to elect someone with such a big, important, and big-paying job, you want to make sure it's being done right. I mean, if you're electing a CEO, I'm pretty sure they'd be extra careful to make sure they're being chosen exactly according to protocol. And this is way bigger than a CEO.
The only thing I saw that really concerned me was when Martin said, quote, "We are not releasing the client side because that would make creation of fake clients too easy." Well, that kind of sounds to me like you're doing it wrong, then.
Yeah, that should be easily handled, shouldn't it?
Well, I mean, if you have your clients with a particular key that is dependent on a hash or something like that with that client not being changed, the server will only accept the input from that client if that hash matches. They should be able to do that. Still, there's a lot to be said for hand counting, but as we all remember, I think, from the 2000 presidential election, even the ones not done by voting machines can get very messy. Remember Florida?
Oh, yeah.
Well, good luck to Estonia, and I guess we'll see what the future has in store for us.
Hopefully better things.
Well, closer to our hemisphere, the UK government is also trying to be a model for the world by privatizing its post office that it's run for something like 500 years.
Really? UK's doing this?
Well, apparently there are all sorts of budget problems with their mail system. I know, big surprise, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the idea is to try and privatize it and put it on a more sustainable long-term financial footing.
Now, is it actual privatization or the fake kind of privatization where they call it private but they subsidize the heck out of it anyway?
Good question. The news reports I've read don't really have that much about specifically what it would be, but they are talking about it being open to competition.
Okay, well, that's one of the big necessary things. Because if you don't allow competition, then you can't really argue that it's private.
Right. But, of course, the unions are complaining about it. The Communications Workers Union, for example, is trying to claim that, oh, so many jobs will be lost to these evil capitalists, and you know how they go on.
Yeah. The thing was, that was a given anyway. All the promises they make to unions are unsustainable, so either the jobs are gone now or more jobs are gone later. Pick your poison.
Well, there's not even any reason to think the jobs are going to be gone, because especially if it's open to competition, you'll just have that many more players in the market, and they'll want to expand, and they'll want to be more efficient than everyone else, and that means hiring more people to get the job done faster.
Well, their jobs in the manner that they've been promised them. That's not going to happen. We all know that.
Yeah.
And really, they shouldn't be mad at the evil capitalists. Be mad at the politicians for making promises they couldn't keep.
That's true. Also, Austria, Germany, and Belgium all have private mail systems, and they all deliver high-quality services at good prices and still make a nice profit. It's interesting how government services can never seem to do that.
Yeah, that's what I always ask people. If government works so well, why not go full bore? And if it doesn't work so well, why do you pick and choose where you say it's necessary and where you say it sucks?
Well, it's like you point out a big government program and say it's not working, and they say, well, that's because they're not doing it right.
Okay, well, what's right then?
Well, but then you show them something that's being done private or with the market or something, and that's just, you know, regulated by the government, just not as much or something like that. You point out how much better that's going, and they'll point to the regulations and say, aha, but it's those regulations that are the reason, even though the more market-based it is, the better it works. And you would think that if regulations were what was doing it, then just having the government, you know, regulate it completely would be the way to make it work perfectly or close to it.
There's not a single firm in existence that's not in violation of regulation, so the term really has lost its meaning.
Yeah, but I was just trying to think of what would happen if they tried that here in the U.S.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but last year, the post office ran a $16 billion loss. They're in the red.
Which is to be expected. It's a business that's being propped up, even though the world is rapidly leaving it behind. I mean, how many people send letters by that method anyway? And if you're sending packages or anything, nobody uses them. They use Federal Express and all that other stuff.
Just remember, it was one guy, Lysander Spooner, in the 19th century, who competed so well with the post office they had to lower the price of stamps to 3 cents. Then, of course, the government declared a monopoly and put him out of business.
Yes, now we put in our monopoly. Problem solved.
Yep, no problems at all. Bogosity.tv and all of its services are hosted at GoDaddy.com. I've been a satisfied GoDaddy customer for over 10 years now. Their prices are great, and their 24/7 support is second to none, so I'm happy to be able to give you this special offer. Just sign up for any new domain, web hosting, email, or many other services, and get 20% off by typing in the code WOWNOBOGON. That's WOWNOBOGON, because there's nothing bogus about these savings on quality internet service. Get your own .com with a personalized email address or establish your online business in a snap, all for 20% off. And if you buy before June 30th, 2013, you'll get a whopping 35% off your order, and you'll help this podcast too. Just go to GoDaddy.com and use the code WOWNOBOGON. Well, there's a lot of stuff coming out about Argentina recently, and unlike the last two stories, it's not good news. Argentina's been doing all sorts of price controls and other manipulation in their markets and generally ruining their economy. Most recently, they've been experiencing shortages of wheat, and so the government passed a law saying that wheat growers have to supply the domestic market before they can export.
The usual, we can make wealth out of thin air, and yet we still need taxes dilemma.
Yeah. Well, you can probably guess what the result is. Farmers just aren't going to grow as much wheat. I mean, if they can't sell it, they won't grow it.
Exactly. People think, oh, the government will just regulate this. People, it still has to come from somewhere. Government does not have the ability to defy reality. You know, what they should be doing is, when there's a shortage, look into why there's a shortage. Don't just assume, oh, the farmers must be being greedy. I mean, that means nothing. Greed is everywhere. Shortages are not everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, people have always been greedy, you know, for thousands of years. So why all of a sudden does it just become this big problem?
Yeah, I mean, the food industry up here is all profit-oriented, and yet we got plenty of everything, pretty much.
Well, back in May, Argentine President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner implemented price controls on 500 different products. And she said, quote, "The government just wants society to be organized." Oh, great. So it's an organized, impoverished mess.
Ah, now that just makes such a difference.
Yeah.
I'll take chaotically wealthy over regulatedly impoverished any day. Thank you very much.
Yeah. I feel the same way about equality. You know, people are talking about the disparity between the rich and poor. Well, I don't want there to be a more income equality if it's a really low equal income.
It's like my... A socialist is someone who would rather everyone made $2 an hour than make $3 an hour while someone else was making $5. It's envy-driven, it's envy to the point of absolute insanity, and it's really not healthy.
But there's something about this human nature. I mean, they've done economic studies of this, asking people, you know, would you rather be making $80,000 where other people are making $120,000? Or making $60,000 where everyone is making $60,000 to $70,000, and so many people, a majority, keep saying that they want the lower wage if it means that everything else is more equal. It just makes no sense.
That's what happens when you have a system that's built on whoever can lobby the government gets to steal from those who are less able to lobby the government.
Yeah.
It creates this idea that the economy is a zero-sum game and it's not fair for one person to have a bigger slice. And that's just a five-year-old's understanding of economics.
I think that might be giving them too much credit. Even a five-year-old understands that more is better.
Exactly.
So how well do you think all this stuff has worked?
Let's see. The farmers aren't producing crops, the people aren't getting crops, and overall, they're not, all the crops are more expensive to obtain, and it has pretty much the exact opposite result as what it was stated.
Pretty much, and the Argentine Census Bureau says that consumer price inflation is rising more than expected when it rose, get this, 0.8% over a one-week period early in July. Now, 0.8% doesn't sound like much, but it actually translates, if you multiply it over the whole year, to 41% annual inflation.
Brilliant.
Now, of course, we don't know. That might go up, that might go down, you know, but it's not good. You know what's going to happen? Instead of saying, oh, ours isn't working, we need to do something different, it's, oh, look, there's still those people in the market doing all these nasty things, we need to do even more of it.
It's like I once said, watching a politician try to solve a problem is like watching someone try to put out a forest fire with gasoline. And when the fire spreads, he arrives at the conclusion that obviously he didn't use enough gasoline and goes to buy some more.
Yeah.
And he bought the gasoline using my credit card.
Exactly.
And it's my forest.
Actually, your kid's credit card.
Yes. Even worse. And it's the forest I was planning to give them when I passed away.
Yeah, and so they're sitting there in this burned-down forest, and then all of a sudden they get this bill from this credit card. 20 years ago, we took this out. But this is the thing, the price mechanism, because price controls never work, the price mechanism is how you deal with shortages. But people kind of have it in their head that it's a zero-sum game, so they think that if you raise prices, only the rich can afford it. But really what happens is the higher price is a signal to increase production. And they increase production, and then everyone has more of it, and that causes the price to go back down again. All you need to do is just allow that to work.
If you're a company in some other country and you hear, hey, guess what? This country is really desperate for these crops and they'll pay top dollar for it. What are you going to do? Just remember, government has no money. It does not have the capacity to produce wealth. It does not. All it has is stuff it's taken from someone else. So when government says they're going to improve the economy, you need to ask yourself, where is it coming from?
Okay, so you know how you're going down the road, and someone flashes his lights to let you know there's a speed trap ahead?
I ride a bike, so I don't do it myself, but I have heard of this practice, yes.
Well, police in Missouri arrested Michael Eli after he did just that.
Did they really have nothing better to do?
Well, I mean, you gotta think, is it because they're trying to protect the public, or are they trying to raise money for the state?
Well, the thing is, by doing that, isn't he causing people to slow down and thus make the road safer?
Yeah.
How exactly is he a threat here? Unless you're just counting to their pocketbooks.
It's also free speech, and there have been a few court cases that have actually supported, yeah, that's free speech. You're just communicating to someone to let them know it's up there. You're not encouraging them to break the law. In fact, if anything, it's the exact opposite.
Yeah, you're reminding them not to break the law.
Well, they dropped the charges because they didn't have anything to stand on. But now, Eli is suing the city in a class action lawsuit because he says this is the city retaliating against drivers who are just exercising this right to free speech and let them know what the police are up to.
Yeah, this is just proof that the speed traps and everything is just to raise revenue for the city. And this is why a justice system based on punishments is just a bad idea because it creates this incentive to turn them into rackets.
Right.
Fines become a source of income, and jail and punishments become a way to intimidate opposition.
Oh, yeah, here it is. It's happened in Florida, Utah, and Tennessee. Courts in those states have examined this question because they claim it's an obstruction of justice, but the courts have said, no, this is free speech. It's protected by the First Amendment. You can't prosecute the headlight flasher.
Yeah, obstruction of justice is more like if your friend was about to commit a crime and you talked him out of it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the police would praise you for that.
But what no one seems to have successfully done so far is actually sue the police for doing it, for violating their civil rights. So now Eli has this class action lawsuit.
Well, good luck to him on that. It's a tricky thing to try and sue them, but it's not unheard of.
Yeah, and the thing is, Rosa Parks sued over the sitting on the back of the bus thing. She lost, and then she lost again, and she kept losing, but then she won. And that's all you need to do, just win once. Doesn't matter how many times you lose. History is written by the winners, and so apparently is economics. That's why there's Liberty Classroom. Probably the best single learning resource for history and economics on the web, Liberty Classroom teaches U.S. history, Western Civ, and economics from actual university professors. There's lots of free material to get you started, including introductory lectures on all these subjects. And when you sign up, you'll get the full site's content for just $99 a year, less than the price of 2 cups of coffee a month. And if you type in the promo code BOGOSITY in all caps, you'll get your first year for just $88. Lectures are available in both video and audio format, so you can watch or listen to them on your computer, your phone or tablet, or in your car. Learn at your own pace about the subjects you're interested in and become a more effective debater. You'll also get access to lots of supplemental materials and even the professors themselves via the discussion forum and even live video chats. Inform yourself against the myths and propaganda of our society. Visit libertyclassroom.com. Well, I guess there's no part of the Constitution the Obama administration doesn't like. To violate, that is. You know this little concept called double jeopardy?
Yeah, that you can't be tried for the same crime twice if you've already been found to be not guilty of it.
Yeah, well, now the Justice Department is looking into whether they can bring criminal charges against George Zimmerman for violating Trayvon Martin's civil rights, even though he was previously acquitted.
As if they already didn't have a flimsy enough case against him already.
Yeah, he's trying to get him under criminal civil rights and hate crimes laws. The problem is that there really isn't any new evidence. And the standard the courts use to determine whether double jeopardy applies is the same evidence standard. If it's the same set of evidence that was used in the previous trial where he was found not guilty, they can't do that. There would have to be new elements using evidence that was not presented in the earlier trial.
The ridiculous thing is, even if all the accusations they level against Zimmerman about the racism, which isn't true, about the racial profiling, which isn't true, about him going looking for trouble with a gun, which also isn't true, even if you accept that all of that is truth, it still doesn't justify what Trayvon Martin did. Even if we assume he's a racist, even if he totally racially profiled him, Trayvon Martin got on him and battered him. There is nothing Zimmerman could have done that would have justified that. At the very most, maybe he could have made a case if he punched him once and ran off to get help, if he thought Zimmerman was threatening him. That's the most he could possibly have justified. As soon as he got him and battered him, he's now the aggressor. There's absolutely no way around it. Wouldn't matter if Zimmerman was a KKK leader.
Yeah. But I mean, even at that, the facts of the case, the elements of the case, they're actually pretty irrelevant to the point of double jeopardy. The point is, do you have anything new? You can't just take the same set of evidence and say, okay, we're going to look on the books for an additional crime that we're going to use the same set of evidence to get him on. You can't just get multiple tries to keep doing it. That's exactly what our founding fathers stopped by putting that clause in the Constitution to begin with.
Yeah, and the people who are supporting this, good Lord, you are playing right into the hands of the people you should be afraid of. Anyone who supports this, you should be questioning why exactly do you want the right to do that.
Exactly.
Just think about the implications of it. You want the government to be able to, if they don't like the results of a court, just keep trying it until they nail someone. That's yet again giving them the ability to nail anyone they want, anytime. Can you think of a single person in the entire world who can be trusted with that kind of power? Because I know I can't.
Now, I don't even know how to categorize this one. It doesn't really fit into Biggest Bogon Emitter or Idiot Extraordinaire. The fail here is in a category all on its own. The Department of Homeland Security has sent out a memo, and I swear, this isn't The Onion, this is real, it's been verified by multiple sources, and, well, I'll just read it out to you. Quote, "There is a recent article on the Washington Post's website that has a clickable link titled, The NSA Slide You Never Seen." Actually, it's called The NSA Slide You Haven't Seen, so not only did they misquote it, they used bad grammar to boot. That'd be really funny if it were the Department of Education doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, that must not be opened on an unclassified government workstation. Now, keep in mind, this is on the Washington Post. Everybody on the planet can open up this webpage and look at this graphic. All right? So they go on to say, quote, "This link opens up a classified document which will raise the classification level of your unclassified workstation to the classification of the slide, which is reported to be TS/NF. That's top secret, no foreigners."
Oh, dang it. We're foiled. If only there was some other place I could look it up. Anywhere? Anywhere?
Well, I mean, just pulling up this slide. Anyway, I mean, it's like they're preventing their employees from being informed about what everyone else on the planet can find out about. So they're less well-informed than the rest of us.
I think we're a little bit shaky on what the term top secret means here, guys.
Isn't it supposed to mean no one else knows about it? No, this goes on. I'm not done yet. Quote, "If opened on an unclassified system, you are obligated to report this to the SSO as a classified data spillage."
Our data is spilled, so report it, otherwise it'll be spilled. I give up.
You reckon there's a medication to help with data spillage? I don't know. "Again, please exercise good judgment when visiting these web pages and clicking on such links. You may be violating your non-disclosure agreement in which you signed that you will protect classified national security information."
Speaking of good judgment, you have none here.
"You may be subject to any administrative or legal action from the government."
And exactly how do you plan to enforce this?
You know what? Ordinarily, I don't do this, but I'm going to put the graphic up in the podcast and in the show notes. So, hey, if you're an employee of the DHS and you're watching this on YouTube, you better turn it off right now. I mean, don't. Oh, too late. The graphic's up. Your computer's now classified. Oh, you better report it. They're going to have to send out another memo now. Don't go to bogosity.tv. We've got the slide up, too. You can't visit our webpage.
Good grief.
And the thing is, we can do that. It's a work of the federal government, so it's in the public domain. I guess for everyone except DHS employees. This top secret public domain document.
Top secret from who?
Hey, you know, if we all grab this graphic and put it up everywhere, DHS employees wouldn't be able to browse the web.
Oh, no.
Just, like, stick it up everywhere.
Are we that evil?
Hey, let's see what this Lord T. Hawkeye character is up to on DeviantArt. Oh, no, he put the graphic up. Shut it down. Quick.
Oh, I don't want...
Hey, what if we found out? No. What if we found out where their office is and what route most of them take home and buy a billboard and just put it up on the billboard? This highway is classified top secret. We can't drive on it.
Oh, I'm getting images like that scene in that Jackie Chan movie where he's got some valuable vases the bad guys can't hit. Keeps holding it in front of them and they can't swing at him.
I don't know what to call this. Stupid doesn't seem to cover it. Moronic, insane, ludicrous.
Making satirists obsolete, that's what it is.
I mean, you just cannot get this kind of fail outside of government bureaucracy. I mean, once a document is leaked, it's over. But you're still going to have bureaucrats going, oh, it's top secret, you're not allowed to see it.
I feel sorry for The Onion. God, they must feel so undercut by this.
Well, I don't think Scott Adams could work this into Dilbert. I mean, what private company even could do something this silly?
The pointy-eared boss has found his match.
Maybe he was the guy who sent the memo.
Could have been.
And now it's time to default on this week's Biggest Bogon Emitter. And this week it goes to Melissa Harris-Perry of MSNBC for her comments about the Detroit bankruptcy that you're just not going to believe unless you hear it for yourself.
But it seems to me that Detroit, as always, is standing in for all kinds of things about America.
Right.
And in the case of Detroit, the reason that the tax base becomes so small is because of a loss of population, right? So folks move out, they're not there to pay the taxes on the homes, and the kind of deterioration is what you see in the numbers you suggested. But this lack of tax base is also exactly the thing that many Republicans would impose on us,
yes,
even when our cities have sufficient populations, even when our communities have sufficient populations. This is what it looks like when government is small enough to drown in your bathtub, and it is not a pretty picture.
Oh, gee, lady, save some of those original arguments for the rest of us, won't you?
How on earth is Detroit small government?
How could you argue anything in the U.S. is small government? This is the biggest and most powerful government history has ever seen. I mean, even if we accept the idea that Detroit was small government or something, all that means is the big federal government had the power to give them what they needed and chose not to, so it still doesn't reflect well on them.
Well, but I mean, people were leaving Detroit because of unemployment, high taxes, and high crime, right? So what did Detroit do? They raised taxes. So more people left, and then they raised taxes again, and so on, and they got in this feedback loop.
Yeah, once again, because of all the promises they made to public sector unions, I heard that was a huge issue.
Yeah.
It's just how the incentives lie, because the politician who made the promise is going to be long gone by the time it comes time to pay their pensions, so... If I gave you a credit card and say, hey, guess what? You're going to be dead by the time the bill for this comes up. What are you going to do? Go on a spending spree. Why wouldn't you?
Well, it got so bad that on average, one resident left Detroit every 22 minutes. Now, who do you think those residents were? Do you think they were the poor unemployed people who were, you know, getting welfare and unemployment benefits? Or were they people who could actually work jobs elsewhere and create businesses and do stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably a bigger pain reapplying for welfare elsewhere than it is to get a business going somewhere else.
Yeah.
Especially if business here was a total drown anyway.
And has everyone else forgotten that Detroit collected tons of stimulus money from the federal government?
Yeah, where the heck did that all go, guys?
Not to mention the fact that every Detroit mayor since 1962 was a Democrat, eager to pass all these big government programs to manage the economy. I mean... how can you possibly make this a point against Republicans when it's been managed by Democrats for 50 years? And in 2011, they had twice as many city employees per capita than other cities of similar size. You had the unions protecting people's jobs, 47 unions in Detroit. All this big government, 40% of their population in poverty, and one of the highest violent crime rates in the country. Okay, this is your city. This is your city on central planning. Any questions?
None whatsoever.
Except what took you so long to figure it out.
Yes, indeed.
I mean, the Detroit City Council won't even so much as sell off land they aren't using to raise revenues.
It's just the typical thing. They always talk about tightening our belts, but when it comes... but them? Oh, no. Whenever the people need something, oh, it's cutbacks and queues. Whenever politicians and the politically connected need something, all of a sudden, there's plenty to go around.
Well, we'll get out of this hole sooner or later if we just keep digging.
Yeah,
we have to stay the course.
And I heard it was made worse by the fact that there was a way people could get out of paying property taxes. That were already ridiculously inflated. People were assessing their houses at way more than they actually are, demanding ridiculous property taxes. So all people did was default on the property tax, and that when the city takes your house, buy it back at a ridiculously cheap price because the city doesn't want to spend money having to take care of it themselves. There was a fellow, they were demanding like $70,000 in property taxes from him, and he defaulted on it. They took his house, and then he bought it back from them for $5,000.
Wow.
Not a bad deal.
Hey, sign me up for that deal. Detroit made decisions that were economically naive, they tried to get something for nothing, and they made promises that they just couldn't keep, and now they're paying the price for all that.
And guess what, America? You're probably going to be paying for all of this.
Which means that Melissa Harris-Perry just has to be this week's biggest bogun emitter. And now it's time to spout lame homophones at this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
And this week, it goes to the entire news department at KTVU for their coverage of the Asiana Flight 214 crash that has to be heard to be believed.
We have new information now also on the plane crash. KTVU has just learned the names of the four pilots who were on board the flight. They are Captain Sum Ting Wong, Wee Tu Lo, Ho Li Fook, and Bang Ding Ao. The NTSB has confirmed these are the names of the pilots on board Flight 214 when it crashed. We are working to determine exactly what roles each of them played during the landing on Saturday.
Oh, gee, just when I'd recovered from that NSA graphic story. I mean, how do you sit there and read that off the prompter and not go, wait a minute.
Moe's Tavern is reality.
And don't they have editors? Did no one notice anything wrong with this?
You'd be amazing what kind of stuff can slip by. You ever seen Jay Leno's headlines? People send him funny headlines, and you wouldn't believe some of the ridiculous stuff that nobody caught.
Well, here's the thing. KTVU said they got the names from the NTSB, and this is apparently true. The NTSB claims that a summer intern confirmed these racist joke names to them as being accurate. So it was just a practical joke, apparently, from this intern. But I'm sorry, that doesn't absolve them. I mean, are they that unthinking about just turning around and repeating what the government tells them without even asking the obvious questions?
Yeah, I mean, I looked at that. That's not a real Chinese name. I know what a real Chinese name looks like. And then... Come on, someone seriously fell for this and fell for it all the way to the point where it got reported?
That intern must be laughing his head off even more than we are.
Or just staring in disbelief like, I did not seriously think it was going to go all the way to that level.
I mean, they just take this info and pass it along to their newsreaders. The newsreaders just unthinkingly read it off their prompters. This is what passes for news these days? No wonder we're in such a mess.
It's like those prank calls in The Simpsons, made real. And we all thought, nobody could be dumb enough to actually fall for that. Come on.
Yeah, but I mean, if this is what they're doing about something obviously bogus like this, you know they're not even questioning it when they pass along, you know, the important stuff.
Oh, yeah. That's the dark side of this.
Yeah, like what's happening in Syria and Iran and all that.
It's like that graphic I once saw. It said, whistleblowing? Back in my day, that was called journalism.
Yeah, exactly. Well, guess what? I did some investigative sleuthing of my own, and I found the names of the people at the news station who were at fault. And this was confirmed by one of the interns. And they are Ima Twerp.
Okay.
Luke A. Moron.
Uh-huh.
Ivan Itty Bitty Brain.
Okay.
No Bell For Me.
Ah.
Bago Hammers.
Yes, of course.
Bjorn Yesterday.
Okay.
And Sedona Shadapa.
Gee, talk about some angry parents.
Yeah, what are the chances, huh?
But I'm sure he wouldn't lie on something like that. I mean, this is important business.
Oh, of course, this is all on the up and up. Of course, after all that, how could KTVU's news team not be this week's...
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Well, that wraps up this You Just Can't Stop Laughing edition of the Bogosity Podcast. I'm serious, my sides are splitting. Please visit the forums at bogosity.tv, where you can read the show notes and join the discussion on these and other subjects. This podcast is free but not free to produce, so please donate via PayPal or Bitcoin at the top of the bogosity.tv website or down the right-hand side of the podcast page, and give generously to keep this podcast going. And if you'd like to contribute to the podcast, just send a question, statement, news article, or rant, or even just profuse laughter, to podcast@bogosity.tv. Put it in an audio file, and if it's good enough, it'll get played right in the podcast. Thank you for listening, and thanks once again to my co-host, Tim Dyson.
Thank you very much. As I always say, be aware and be wise.
Until next time, here's a quote from Robert Heinlein. Never underestimate the power of human stupidity. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Imported License.
Bogosity.